Hold it.
The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, 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 golden.
Bay's Golden Days, I'm Marcus Boucher, and welcome back to another week of NFL coverage right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. 16 weeks of the 2017 NFL season are in the books, and that means there is only 1 week left to determine who are going to be the final teams to make the playoffs. And man, oh man, what a crazy season it has been. At least 8 of the teams that will be in the playoffs this year were not in the playoffs last year. Yes, we've talked about all the parity that has been showcased this year in the 2017 NFL season. Well, we are going to have some new teams in the playoffs, because for the first time since 1964, there will be no Cowboys, no Packers, no Giants, no Redskins, or no 49ers. Hell, you can even throw the Raiders in there too, because they're not making the playoffs either. So they just add to the list of those historic franchises that will not be taking a postseason trip this year. But don't worry, we'll talk about everything that happened in week 16 before moving on to our final week of the NFL season, week 17, as we look ahead in our weekly betting segment, Straight Cash Homie, where we look at every single matchup and give you our best picks and bets from week 17 of the 2017 NFL season. But before we get to the final week of the NFL season, I got to give a shout out to everybody who made finals week in fantasy football. Yes, week 16 is championship week for fantasy football. Unless you're one of those idiots that play in week 17 championship, I don't know what the hell you're doing. You should talk to your commissioner, find a new commissioner, find a new league. But for everybody who played in week 16, congratulations to the champions. And when I say congratulations to the champions, I mean congratulations to me, myself, and I. And fuck everybody else in my fantasy league that I beat this year in Dynasty League to go back-to-back championship, baby. Let's go. Shout out to everybody who took home some money and took home the trophy this year. The glory is all good, and the glory belongs to the Bay's Golden Days as we win another fantasy football league. But enough bragging, enough boasting, and enough fuck you to my league mates that are listening to this podcast right now. Let's hop straight into this Monday night Christmas massacre between the Raiders and the Eagles.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit.
Round 16 of the NFL season in the city of brotherly love.
Make the most of every opportunity you get, man.
It's the chance to spoil the fun.
All your homeboys, your mama, your daddy, don't let them down. Let's go.
Do it for the town.
Family on three. 1, 2, 3.
Do it for pride.
That's how winning is done.
And just win. Raiders, Eagles on Christmas night.
Raiders, Eagles, Monday Night Football on Christmas night, and the Raiders lose 19-10. They must have been on Santa Claus's naughty list, because man, oh man, was this a naughty game to watch. It was not a nice feeling at all. The Raiders were eliminated before the game even started, so hopes were down from the beginning, and this was just an ugly, sloppy game. Temperatures were about 15 to 20 degrees, and there were 15 to 20 mile per hour winds that equaled 7 total turnovers in a game, a couple missed field goals, and it was just sloppy all around. So let's go ahead and hop in from the beginning. In the first quarter, the Raiders defense starts off the game with a big three and out that really set the tone for the whole entire game. The defense impressed me thoroughly throughout the whole entire game, but the offense on the other side gets a couple first downs to start off the game, but penalties back them up on third down, back them up again on third down. They end up punting, and that was just a sign of what was to come for this Raiders offense. Next thing you know, the Eagles go on an 11-play, 58-yard touchdown drive after converting on a 4th-and-1 at Oakland's own 20-yard line. Nick Foles then hits Jay Ajayi on a little 17-yard check down touchdown screen pass, and he waltzed into the end zone pretty much untouched to go up 7-0. That was all the action from the first quarter, and as we get to the second quarter, the Raiders' third possession of the game, they go 74 yards in three plays thanks to a clean double move by Amari Cooper for a 63-yard touchdown. He straight up broke Jalen Mills. They're running a lot of 13-man personnel in the beginning where there's only one wide receiver running the ball with those win conditions. Next thing you know, Amari Cooper fakes it inside on a slant, cuts back out for a streak. Next thing you know, Jalen Mills is sent through the spin cycle looking for his jockstrap as Amari Cooper dances into the end zone for a 63-yard touchdown, and we are tied 7-7. The Eagles then try to take the lead before halftime, but Jake Elliott misses the field goal, and it is tied at halftime. Like I said, these weather conditions played a factor in this game. You could tell in the first half with the missed kicks and how much the teams were both running the ball, but as we got to the third quarter, the Raiders actually started off the second half with an 8-play, 69-yard drive all the way down to the Eagles' 6-yard line on the back of Marshawn Lynch and Jalen Richard. Jalen Richard had a great 34-yard run. I thought it was a great change of pace back between him and Marshawn Lynch. But as we approach the goal line, we get in a 3rd-and-3 situation, and Derek Carr flushes out to the right and tries to find Michael Crabtree on a comeback route right at the goal line, but he cannot bring it in as Michael Crabtree had one hell of a rough day. No catches on the day, a couple of drops, was only targeted 3-4 times, and the Raiders have to settle for a field goal, and they take the lead 10-7. Next thing you know, the Raiders get back-to-back 3-and-outs as his defense is playing lights out, but the Raiders' offense just can't capitalize as Derek Carr tries to force the ball over the middle to Seth Roberts, and it's picked off. But wait, 2 plays later, Jay Ajayi gives the ball right back as he fumbles it again, and TJ Carey recovers it, and it's Raiders' ball. Yippee! For one fucking play as Marshawn Lynch then fumbles the ball right back to the Eagles on the very next play. Marshawn Lynch's first fumble of the year. And as I mentioned, this was a sloppy game. There were 3 turnovers in the last 4 plays. Yes, the Eagles and the Raiders both playing terrible on Christmas, but what do you know? The Raiders defense holds and forces a field goal, and the game is now tied 10-10 leading into the fourth quarter, where the Raiders try to lead their own field goal drive themselves. They set up Georgie Tavecchio for a 48-yard attempt, and it's wide right. Georgie Tavecchio misses another huge field goal. Right after the missed field goal, though, the very next play, Nick Foles overthrows Zach Ertz. It tips off his hands and goes into the hands of Reggie Nelson for an interception. And the Raiders are looking like they finally have some life, finally caught a break after all these turnovers. But next thing you know, Jalen Richard is running hard on back-to-back plays. He gets a nice screen pass, gets him down the yard. Then he breaks off a 10-yard run and gets stripped. And the Eagles recover, and it's another turnover for the Raiders. But not all hope is lost yet, because the Eagles then go 3-and-out. And the Raiders respond with a 3-and-out. Then the Eagles go 3-and-out again. And then we got 1 minute left in the game. The Raiders are at midfield. Derek Carr is driving. He's trying to force the ball to Amari Cooper with pressure in his face. Turns and really looks without even thinking about it. Just thinks Amari's going to be open. And he throws his second interception of the day at their own 46-yard line. That means the Eagles only needed to get 20 yards to get in the field goal range. Guess what? They hit Zach Ertz a couple times, got those 20 yards, and got the field goal with 22 seconds left to take the 13-10 lead. And then to put the cherry on top for what has been the 2017 Raiders season, the last play of the game, hook and ladder, pitch fest. They were hoping Stanford and Cal would bring out the band and be running on the field. They're trying to pitch it back and forth, and next thing you know, it's a fumble, scoop and score by the Eagles. They get in the end zone, and they end up winning 19-10, and they just ruined everybody's bets. Get that 9-point spread. We got it earlier in the week at 9 points. I heard the point spread creeped up to 10, 10.5. So if you had a 10-point spread, you got lucky, and you can wipe the sweat off your forehead. Or if you bet on the Eagles to win by 10, hell, if you got the Raiders +9, you got screwed over by this last play. But man, oh man, it really does just sum up the Raiders 2017 season, just shooting themselves in the foot and just falling apart, because this was honestly a game that the Raiders could have won. If you're telling me the Eagles were the number one team in the NFC and this is how they beat the Raiders, on a last-minute field goal with 30 seconds left to go up 13-10, and then the scoop and score. I don't even want to say the final score, 19-10. This game ended 13-10 in a game that the Raiders could have easily won, in a game that the Raiders had more total yards, in a game that the Raiders won the time of possession battle. It just really came down to we lost a turnover battle. Yes, 7 turnovers total in this game, 5 of them by the Raiders, 2 missed field goals. Both teams missed a field goal, and it was just disgusting. I don't even want to talk about our offense, so I'll start with something positive, and I'll talk about our defense to start it off, because man, oh man, what John Pagano has done for this defense has been impressive. He now has this defense recording 16 sacks and 8 turnovers in the 5 games since taking over as defensive coordinator. Hell, we've seen our interception total not only double, triple, quadruple under John Pagano, so I think he's playing phenomenal. He's moving Khalil Mack all over the defensive line to get him matched up in plus situations. We see Bruce Irvin's playing well, Danica Audrey, hell, even Jahad Ward got a sack this game. This defense came to play. The Eagles were averaging 386 yards per game. They were held to 216 total yards this game. I know what everybody's saying. No stats are with Carson Wentz. But, hey, everybody last week was saying Nick Foles can pick it up. Nick Foles can still take the Eagles to the Super Bowl. Hell, Nick Foles threw for 7 touchdown passes against the Raiders before. So everybody and their mama was trying to pick up Nick Foles for their fantasy championship this week. And if you did, ha, sucks for you. You lost because you're trying to be a scavenger in the finals because Nick Foles did not have a good day. As I said, Derek Carr and Nick Foles both had bad days trying to pass the ball in this 20-mile-per-hour weather, but this Raiders defense, let me get back to them. They were shutting down Nick Foles on third down. The Eagles, before this game on Christmas, were the number one team on third down conversion with a 45% conversion rate. They were 1 for 14 on third down versus the Raiders. That's 7%. Yes, 8 of the 14 Raiders defensive drives resulted in a 3 and out or a turnover. If you would have told me all these stats, I would have told you the Raiders were going 16-0 this year. They wouldn't have lost a game. They'd be undefeated with a defense playing like this against what's supposed to be one of the top offenses in the NFL. Hell, I don't know if the weather really did play that much of a factor, if John Pagano's defensive schemes are working that much better. Hell, we talked about Sean Smith the whole first half of the season. People wanted him cut. People wanted him released. And now he's not even letting up any targets. He's not even letting up any yards. He's playing phenomenal. He's actually playing in a scheme that benefits him. It seems like everybody has improved now with John Pagano in this defense. And like I said, we should have won this game holding this Eagles offense to only 1 touchdown. Yes, 1 touchdown the entire game, and those 2 field goals came off of turnovers and bad field positioning. I want to give hats off to this defense. Mack was back there causing pressure all day. Carl Joseph came up, made a couple tackles. Navarro Bowman, everybody was playing well. Reggie Nelson got a pick. All these DBs are playing better. We talked about how bad they were. Well, in John Pagano's defense, they have improved tremendously. So at least there's one positive look at. Now let's talk about the negative, and let's talk about this offense, because passing was just a shit show on both sides of the ball. Like I said, Derek Carr and Nick Foles both did not have good games. Derek Carr's biggest play of the day was a 60-yard bomb to Amari Cooper on that double move in the first half. Derek Carr's first half stats were pretty good. He was 8 for 12 with 118 yards and a touchdown. In the second half, 7 for 17, 22 yards, 2 interceptions. Yes, he ended the game 15 of 29, 140 yards, and 2 interceptions. How the hell do you only throw for 22 yards in the second half? Well, I'll tell you. It's because our goddamn offensive coordinator, Todd Downing, keeps on calling screen passes every fucking play. Yes, third down, check down. Third down, check down. Third down, check down. What the hell? Al Davis used to get mad at coaches because they said, oh, we want to put us in a third and manageable situation. What the hell is manageable? Get the yards now and get into the end zone, big Al Davis used to say, and he would be rolling over in his grave looking at all the bad coaching decisions by Todd Downing this weekend. Todd Downing in this Raiders offense was 3 for 13 on third down. Hell, I made fun of the Eagles going 1 for 14. The Raiders were pretty much just as bad going 3 for 13 on third down and 0 for 2 on fourth down. And the biggest thing that pissed me off this game, the Raiders were in a 4th-and-2 situation early, and we go in a shotgun formation? What? We have Marshawn Lynch. How do you not hand off the ball? He does a nice little rollout play where no one even gets open, and Derek Carr just has to throw the ball out of bounds on fourth down. That's how bad of a play call it was when your quarterback has to throw the ball out of bounds on fourth down. That is truly pathetic. This rookie offensive coordinator, Todd Downing, I think it's the biggest differential. We see two sides of the Bay where you see Jimmy Garoppolo exceeding and going off in Kyle Shanahan's playbook. Well, Kyle Shanahan is straight drawing wide receivers open. It seems like every time Jimmy Garoppolo releases the ball, his wide receivers are wide open. Shanahan is out scheming coaches. While on this side of the Bay, Todd Downey couldn't get a wide receiver open if his life depended on it. It seems like we got these stupid ass little screen passes. There's multiple routes that wide receivers are running the same routes. So of course it's easy for the DBs. You got one DB covering two wide receivers because they're running the same route in the same area. I don't get it. How do you not get the ball to Michael Crabtree? Zero catches. He was targeted 17 times last week. Hell, he was barely in the game. As I mentioned earlier, the Raiders ran a lot of 13 personnel, which means one wide receiver, three tight ends, a couple extra offensive linemen. They ran the ball well, but when they ran that 13-man personnel, they ran it with Seth Roberts and Cordell Patterson as the number one wide receiver. Where's Coop? Where's Crabtree? It's pretty obvious you're going to run the ball when you got your number one and number two wide receivers standing on the sideline. Yes, I guess Cordell and Seth might be better blockers, but still, how about a play action every once in a while? How about going deep? How about Todd Downing when Amari Cooper dusts Jalen Mills on a double move? You think you might want to go back to that again? No, he didn't call another deep pass the whole entire fucking game. I don't understand it. This Raiders offense is just falling apart with Todd Downing taking over. You guys have heard all my rants this year. The offensive line actually played pretty well considering the fact that Donald Penn was missing. Marshall Newhouse, though, on the right side, he's been getting beat up all year long. And Chris Long was making him look like a rookie over there. Chris Long was just a bully against Marshall Newhouse over there, taking away his Christmas gifts and getting to Derek Carr. But man, Lynch did good on the ground, 95 yards on 25 carries. We have more rushing yards than the Eagles. Damn near almost had more passing yards. We did have more total yards. We won the time of possession, like I said. We just lost the turnover battle. We lost the coaching battle, it seemed like. And the Raiders' chances at the 2017 postseason are officially done. As I mentioned before the game even started, we got knocked out by other teams winning. But hey, it is what it is. You can't do nothing about it now. I've talked about it all year long. The Raiders have been a true disappointment, but there is one thing they can do to salvage the season, and that is to be the spoiler for the Los Angeles Chargers in Week 17. But before we get into Week 17, you know we got to go into the recap, so let's go ahead and check out what happened in Week 16 of the 2017 NFL season in 60 seconds.
It's Sunday in 60 seconds, Week 16, and Von Miller is bringing the Christmas cheer. What Jay Cutler giveth, Marcus Peters taketh away. Marshall Lattimore gets the unconventional interception.
It stays on the backside of Marshawn Lattimore.
One hand, 2 feet, and 6 points for Gronk. The Browns' rough season continues, but Myles Garrett was sent from heaven. Bilal Powell turns on the Jets. Cam dribbles, drives, and takes it to the hole. Gurley goes wild as the Rams clinch the NFC West.
Todd Gurley, touchdown, Los Angeles Rams.
All I want for Christmas is Drew Stanton to Larry Fitz. Jimmy GQ stays perfect in every way.
All about G in San Francisco.
And that's a pick six and a leap into the Salvation Army kettle. Has anyone ever done that before in Dallas?
And Elliott walks the dog and jumps into the Salvation Army red kettle.
Well, that's it for Week 16. Bro hugs all around.
There it is. Week 16 is officially done. Just like the playoff hopes for the Cowboys, the Packers, the Giants, the Redskins, the Raiders, and the 49ers. As I mentioned to start off this podcast, for the first time since 1964, none of these respected franchises will be represented in the playoffs. As I mentioned, the Raiders getting eliminated by the Eagles this past weekend. The Eagles actually clinched home field advantage. But let's go ahead and talk about the team that won the AFC West. The Kansas City Chiefs get it done once again to go back-to-back in the AFC West, beating the Dolphins 29-13 and winning you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days as they covered their 10-point spread and eliminate the Miami Dolphins officially from playoffs. Alex Smith had a good game with 300 yards and a touchdown. Kareem Hunt got back in the mix with 29 carries, 91 yards, and Tyreek Hill once again went over 100 yards. The Kansas City Chiefs are now the second team in NFL history to have a quarterback throw for over 4,000, a wide receiver catch for over 1,000, 1,000, a tight end catch for over 1,000, and a running back run for over 1,000 yards. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs with all these weapons, and you want to talk about the defense side of the ball. Marcus Peters had another interception this weekend. He has been playing great lately. The Chiefs winning back-to-back games are setting them up for a playoff run. Let's see if that momentum will carry over as they will have to play the Broncos next week. But let's go ahead and finish off that AFC West as we'll talk about the Chargers and the Jets. And the Chargers are still alive for now. Muhahaha. As I mentioned, they will be taking on the Raiders next week, and the Raiders will have a chance to play spoiler against the Chargers. But for week 16, they took care of the Jets 14-7. This was a boring game. This was not a good game to watch, but this was a game that I told you to take the Chargers minus 6.5 points, and they won by 7, so they won you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Melvin Gordon was able to find the end zone, and so was Antonio Gates, with Hunter Henry now going to the IR. The OG had to step up, and that's exactly what he did, as he had 6 catches for 81 yards and that big touchdown from Phillip Rivers. Let's see what the Chargers can do next week. We'll get more into that preview in our Week 17 Straight Cash Homie segment, but let's go ahead and finish off the AFC West as the Broncos got whooped on by the Redskins 27-11. This is a game that I told you the Broncos defense could possibly stay in it, so take the Broncos plus 3, but no, that is not what they did, as Kirk Cousins came in and just torched this no-fly zone for 299 yards and 3 touchdowns. Hell, this could be a team that he ends up playing for next year. The rumors are that the Redskins still don't know if they're going to franchise tag Kirk Cousins or not for the third straight year. So if he's a free agent, the Broncos could be one of those teams knocking at the door for Kirk Cousins. And hey, after that impressive performance, I'm sure John Elway is a Kirk Cousins fan, because he had Brock Osweiler on the field. Brock Osweiler threw for 193 yards, an interception, and tried to give a ya-ya, yippity-ya speech to inspire the troops. But nobody on the team listened to Brock Osweiler. No one was hearing it. They all just ignored him and tuned him out. And that was the Broncos offense, was ignored and tuned out, as they couldn't get anything going. They had a field goal in the first, had 8 points late in the game, but it's just garbage points. The game was already over, and the Broncos, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, have already been eliminated, so this game was pretty much irrelevant. Let's go ahead now and move on to a couple division matchups. We had the Chargers playing the Jets, and we had the Chiefs playing the Dolphins, so let's go ahead and finish off the AFC East with the Patriots and the Bills, and surprise, surprise, the Patriots won 37-16 to cover that 12-point spread, and now the Patriots have won the AFC East once again. They have won 12 straight games for 8 straight years. Man, oh man, the AFC East, the AFC Least, the AFC, get off your knees and stop blowing Tom Brady. I said it since the season preview how bad this division was and how easy of a cakewalk it is for Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, and all these Patriots. 8 straight years now, they have won 12 plus games. Rob Gronkowski said, hey, I got here 8 years ago. Coincidence? I think not, because Robert Gronkowski, as I mentioned on previous podcasts, is looking like one of the greatest tight ends of all time, not just this year, but this man has already got as many touchdowns as like the top 5 tight ends combined. He had a sick one-handed catch this weekend. Tom Brady is just loving him some Gronk. They won the Super Bowl without him, and now he's healthy. He is going to be a huge factor for this playoff run, because Tom Brady threw an interception again. He's now thrown an interception in 5 straight games for the first time in 15 years. Tom Brady was dealing with that ankle injury. I'm sure he'll be fine, though. He took care of the Bills pretty easily. This was a game that was close at halftime, time 13-13. Kelvin Benjamin thought he had a touchdown in the back of the end zone, and no, the Patriots played off the replay guys once again. You know Bill Bill, cheat. He does what he got to do to cheat. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. The Patriots are always trying to win, always trying to pull some bullshit out of nowhere, and they got the W over the Bills, 37-16. But let's keep it moving now with a couple division matchups. Let's go to the NFC South, as this is probably going to be the most interesting division end of the year. There could be possibly 3 playoff teams. Well, we had a matchup between the Falcons and the Saints, and it was winner get in. The Saints won 23-13 to cover that 5.5-point spread and clinched a playoff spot. Drew Brees did not have to do too much. He had 239 yards and 1 big touchdown that was a huge momentum swing right before the half. The Falcons were only down 6-0 with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones driving down the field. Next thing you know, a huge momentum swing comes in the form of a butt pick. Yes, the butt interception. We've all heard about the Mark Sanchez and the butt fumble, but no, the butt interception. It's, ball gets tipped, lands on the ass of Marshawn Lattimore. Someone else picks it up, and then the next play, what do you know? Drew Brees goes deep and hits Teddy Ginn on a 50-yard bomb to take a huge 13-0 lead. That was a big swing in this game, and the Falcons just really cannot come back after that. Matt Ryan did have a touchdown late in the game to Coleman. Julio Jones ended with 7 catches for 150 yards, but it was too little too late as Drew Brees clinches the playoff spots for the Saints and becomes the third quarterback to throw for 70,000 passing yards. Hell, they've been running the ball so much this year that I thought he would have got this a couple games ago, but Drew Brees, the less he throws, the better the Saints are. It's the weirdest oxymoron I've ever heard, but hey, Saints fans will take it because who dat will be in the playoffs representing the NFC South. But let's go ahead and talk about another team from the NFC South that clinched the playoff spot, and that is the Carolina Panthers. They won this weekend but did not cover that 10-point spread, 22-19 over the Buccaneers, and this was a pretty ugly and sloppy game that went back and forth, back and forth. Jameis Winston was trying to put the team on his back with 367 yards. Mike Evans had 6 catches for 107 yards, but Jameis Winston comes up huge and fumbles on the final drive of the game, freaks out, gets sacked, thought he recovered the fumble. Next thing you know, he's trying to fight guys on his own sideline. It was just a scene down there in Carolina as Cam Newton sneaks into the playoffs. Yes, I say sneak in, literally snuck in on pretty much the final play of the game. He ended with 160 yards and 52 yards rushing, and the rushing touchdown off of Fumble Ruski for the game winner. Yes, Fumble Ruski, Fumble Ruski. Cam Newton straight bounce, passes the ball off the ground, scoops and scores himself, dives into the end zone, and that was pretty much the only offense for the Panthers the whole entire game. They had a punt return touchdown earlier in the day, but hey, they'll take it. They got the W, they got the win, and they clinched themselves a playoff spot, so I'm sure there's not too much complaining going on in Carolina. Let's go ahead and keep with the theme and stick with another division matchup between the Vikings and the Packers in the NFC North. This was a game that was played on Saturday this past weekend, and the Vikings absolutely dominated the Packers 16-0, and this was a game where I told you on the podcast before the Aaron Rodgers news even came out to take the Vikings in a pick'em game. Yes, the Aaron Rodgers news broke, and next thing you knew, the Vikings were 9-point favorites. But hey, even if you took the Vikings -9, they still covered as they won 16-0 and shut out the Packers at Lambeau Field for the first time in franchise history. And how about these Vikings with another shutout? They're now the number one defense overall in the whole entire league, with the Jaguars getting torched by the Niners and all that. We'll talk about that later. But the Vikings are getting it done on both sides of the ball, on third down conversion, on stopping teams on third down. And Case Keenum only needed 139 yards and a touchdown, but that was his 21st touchdown of the season. That's the most by a Vikings quarterback since Brett Favre did it back in 2009. So we'll see if Case Keenum can break out any of that Brett Favre magic on this playoff run that is ahead for the Vikings. Hell, if they win the number one overall seed, if the Eagles lose next week, they could not have another road game throughout the whole entire playoffs, because as everybody knows, the Minnesota Vikings will be hosting the Super Bowl. So imagine that, the home field advantage in a Super Bowl. It has never happened before, and it's going to rely on the back of Case Keenum to see if it's going to happen. I don't know about that, but with the way that the Vikings defense is playing, anything is possible. Well, let's go ahead and move on now and keep it moving in that NFC North division, with the Detroit Lions being officially eliminated from playoff contention because they lost to the Bengals. Yes, like I said, the 2017 season makes no sense at all. The Bengals have been getting embarrassed the past couple weeks, and the Lions were fighting for a playoff spot, and the Lions lose 26-17 as Andy Dalton throws a touchdown, throws for 238 yards, but Giovanni Bernard, with Joe Mixon getting hurt again, had a huge day with 116 rushing yards and a touchdown. A.J. Green even had 6 catches, 81 yards. Eric Ebron tried to get into the end zone for Matthew Stafford a couple times, but it was not enough as the Lions are eliminated officially from playoffs. And let's go ahead and talk about two teams that have been eliminated for a while now in the NFC North. That is the Chicago Bears and the Cleveland Browns. Yes, playing in the bottom of the barrel bowl, the Chicago Bears were able to avoid embarrassment by beating the Browns 20-3. Yes, it was a snowy day. It was a ugly day. It was a day that the Cleveland Browns officially clinched the number one overall draft pick. So they will have back-to-back draft picks for the first time since the Cleveland Browns did it in 2000 and 2001. Hey, consistency is the way to build a franchise, I guess. The Cleveland Browns have been terrible, but hey, we can't complain because we took the Bears -6.5 points and they won by 17. So they won you some money right here on the Bears Golden Days. And hey, give some shout out to the Bears because they have now somehow swept the entire AFC North. Yes, they beat everybody. They put it on the Ravens, they put it on the Bengals, they put it on the Bears, and they put it on the Steelers. Yes, the Bears have swept the AFC North completely. Mitchell Trubisky set a franchise record for most passing yards by a rookie for the Bears. Jordan Howard found the end zone twice, even though he only had 44 yards on 22 carries. The Bears get it done, and unfortunately to them, they don't play in the AFC North, because if they did, they'd probably be looking like a playoff team right now. But unfortunately, in the NFC, they are eliminated. But let's go ahead and talk about the winner from the AFC North, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who won this weekend 34-6 to cover that 9.5-point spread and give you a nice Christmas present right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Yes, the Steelers dominated, and in doing so, they clinched the first round bye. Ben Roethlisberger threw for 226 yards, two touchdowns. Le'Veon Bell only needed 14 carries for 69 yards and a touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster ended up in the end zone, and the Steelers were pretty much benching their starters by the fourth quarter because T.J. Yates was in and out of this game. I couldn't remember the name of the backup quarterback who was in, but it was 20-0 by halftime, 27-0 by the third. There was a late garbage time touchdown, and it was probably the best garbage time touchdown I've ever seen because DeAndre Hopkins damn near had the catch of the year. Tips the ball up to himself, brings it in with one hand to get the touchdown, but they missed the extra point. And that's been a Texans season so far. Ever since Deshaun Watson went down, they have fallen apart. But hey, the Steelers won't complain, and neither will we, because like I mentioned, the Steelers finally covered the spread and won you some money for a nice Christmas present, 34-6. And they are now sitting with that first round bye, which is huge, obviously, for Antonio Brown's injury. They said he would not be ready for the wild card game, but hey, they ain't even got to play in the wild card game now. They got a bye, so hopefully Antonio Brown gets healthy and he gets back in for the playoff run. But let's go ahead and stay in that same division, the AFC North, and look at a team that is trying to make a playoff run themselves. That is the Baltimore Ravens, who keep themselves in wild card contention by getting a 23-16 win over the Colts. This is a game that I picked the Ravens to win, but they did not cover the spread. Yes, they were favored by 13. I thought maybe they could just get a shutout, but Jacoby Brissett was able to put some points on the board as T.Y. Hilton had 6 catches for 100 yards. This truly was an ugly game. I talked about all the weather this weekend. Hell, there was wind in Philadelphia, there was snow in Chicago, and there was rain in Baltimore because this game was pissing rain left and right. Joe Flacco tried to throw a couple deep balls, connected twice with Mike Wallace. He had 60 yards. Flacco got a couple touchdowns. Collins got into the end zone. And at the end of the day, this truly was just an ugly, sloppy, hard-nosed game, which perfectly describes the Baltimore Ravens this whole entire season. They're still fighting, still creeping and crawling their way into a wild card spot, and they still got a chance. But let's go ahead and move on now. We talked about the Ravens and the Colts. We'll stick in the Colts division with that AFC South and look at the Tennessee Titans, who would have won and got in this weekend, but they lost to the Rams 27-23. I told you to take the Rams, but unfortunately they did not cover that 6.5-point spread as they only won by 4. But hey, not too bad news for the Rams because you still got the W and you still clinched the NFC West. Yes, Todd Gurley absolutely put the team on his back this weekend. Hell, Todd Gurley put fantasy teams on his back this weekend as the man rushed 22 times for 118 yards, had 10 catches for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns. Yes, he has over 2,000 yards from scrimmage now on the season. Todd Gurley single-handedly won people fantasy championships. I can guarantee you that. The man has been just a force the past couple of weeks. And then you want to throw in top of that Jared Goff, 301 yards and his 4 touchdowns. The Rams offense is playing phenomenal. Aaron Donald is playing like a defensive player of the year right now. He has been a monster the past couple games, and they absolutely shut down the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota. Mariota threw for 275 yards, but did have a big costly interception. He could not find the end zone. DeMarco did get into the end zone, but this exotic smash mouth rush offense from the Titans had to be pushed back a little bit as they were playing from behind for most of this game. It was truly impressive by Goff and Gurley carrying his team to a division title, but Todd Gurley, get this man in the MVP conversation. He has been phenomenal this year. What a bounce back performance from last year, not only from Todd Gurley, but this whole entire Rams team with a rookie coach, the youngest coach in the entire league. The Rams are playing phenomenal, while the Titans will still be fighting for their lives next week, looking for a wild card spot, because with their loss, they gave the AFC South title to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes, the Jacksonville Jaguars clinched the AFC South this weekend, even though they lost. And there was a couple of players from the Jaguars who, before this game against the 49ers, said, hey, this is just a hat and t-shirt game. Well, technically they weren't wrong because they still got their hats and t-shirts because the Titans lost and they clinched the AFC South. I just don't think this is the way that they want to pass out hats and t-shirts after this game, and I hope they did it in the locker room because they got absolutely embarrassed by the 49ers. Yes, the 49ers put up 44 points against the Jacksonville Jaguars. How is this possible? I thought Jacksonville was supposed to have one of the best defenses in the league. Well, I'll tell you how it's possible. The Jacksonville Jaguars have not won a game in the Pacific time zone since 2005. Yes, in over 10 years, they have not won on the West Coast, and they have not won in an afternoon slot on the road since 2008. Well, they got both of those things going against them this weekend, and they look like they're out of it from the beginning. You want to talk about all the things they're dealing with injuries and all that nonsense? Hell, just look at them falling apart. They look like they exploded on the sidelines. They were fighting with each other left and right, and it was just a bad day for the old Blake Bortles to show up because it was just only a matter of time before Blake Bortles went all Blake Bortles. Yes, I've been saying it all year long. That is the one reason why I'm not putting any money on the Jaguars to have a playoff run, because if they want any success in this playoff, they need Blake Bortles to have a Joe Flacco no interception playoff run to make it all the way to the Super Bowl. And I just don't think that's too possible. Everybody's praising him. Oh, he's doing so good the past couple weeks. Blake Bortles, he's changed. He's a whole new quarterback. And he comes and throws three interceptions against the Niners. I know he was playing with his back up against the wall because the 49ers defense was able to shut down the run. Fournette only had 18 carries for 48 yards. He did find the end zone, but the way that the 49ers run defense has been playing all year, hell, they should be playing well. They've drafted defensive linemen in back-to-back-to-back years, but after shutting down Fournette, they forced Blake Bortles to throw early after taking a 16-point lead in the first half. The Jacksonville Jaguars then tied it up 16-16 at halftime, but Jimmy Garoppolo came in to save the day, throwing for 242 yards, two touchdowns, did have one interception early, but he is the first quarterback to have an over 100 QBR against the Jaguars. And as I mentioned, this was defense, this was coaching, and this was just an all-around effort from the 49ers, because I got to give some credit to Kyle Shanahan. Like I said in the Raiders segment, the way that he calls and designs plays to get players open, it's just on a whole nother level than Todd Downing over here in Oakland. We've seen it before, Kyle Shanahan in the Super Bowl with Matt Ryan in the Falcons. Hell, Matt Ryan was an MVP quarterback last year with Kyle Shanahan's offense. They left and they have taken immense steps backwards. Hell, I was watching the Saints-Falcons game this weekend, and they said that the Falcons' offense went from being the third-best offense at deep balls down the field to the 26th. That's how big of an impact that Kyle Shanahan has on an offense. And every time I'm looking at this game, watching Garoppolo, he's just throwing to wide open wide receivers. Hell, even he had wide open wide receivers even when Garoppolo wasn't starting. Just the wide receivers weren't catching balls, but now everybody's catching balls and everybody's turning up. Everybody's playing well. Carlos Hyde got into the end zone. Matt Breida ripped off the dagger at the end of the game. The 49ers did a great job, as I mentioned, to start off this podcast, shutting down Leonard Fournette and the running offense from the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blake Bortles, as I mentioned, with his back up against the wall, 8 of the 11 wide receivers on the Jacksonville Jaguars 90-man roster are hurt or on the IR. Yes, they lost Allen Robinson to start the year, lost Allen Hurns, lost pretty much anybody who could wear number 80. How do you got 8 guys? There's only 9 numbers in the 80s that you can use. It's a good thing wide receivers started going in the double digits, the 11s, the 12s, the 18s, because there were not enough 80s for the Jacksonville Jaguars because they are truly depleted. Keenan Cole still had 6 catches for 108 yards, and this was a back-and-forth game that really the Jacksonville Jaguars played their worst. The 49ers played their best, and that's why they got the win. It's as simple as that. Garoppolo looked cool, calm, and looked pretty good against an elite defense, but this is the Jacksonville Jaguars team, like I said, hasn't won a game in the Pacific time zone since 2005. They better hope they ain't got to come out to the West Coast for the playoffs, because they looked absolutely terrible, and the 49er parade continues as Jimmy Garoppolo and the season just started 5 weeks ago for the Niners. They're going to be pretty disappointed when it ends next week. But hey, Niner fans, enjoy the Bay's Golden Days right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. But let's go ahead and keep it moving now with the team from the NFC West that actually has a chance to make the playoffs. And that is the Seattle Seahawks, getting a huge win over the Dallas Cowboys this weekend, 21-12. I actually took the Cowboys for the upset, the way that the Seahawks were falling apart. Teammates are calling each other out. Hell, Earl Thomas, even after winning the game, still tried to jump ship and join the Cowboys somehow. Someone's got to get the note to Earl Thomas that the Cowboys are now officially eliminated from playoffs because the the Seahawks win and get in next weekend. If the Falcons lose, the Seahawks will be that last wild card team. It should be interesting to come down to the final week 17 of the season, one of the few games that actually has some meaning. But let's go ahead and jump into this game and see how the Seahawks won 21-12. A big reason for that was Dak Prescott playing terrible. Yes, he threw for 182 yards and two interceptions. He only threw four interceptions all of last year. He's thrown four pick sixes this season, and that's exactly what the Seahawks did this weekend. They took him to the house on a pick six, and the Seahawks defense was all over Dak. They were all over Zeke. They were all over Dez. They shut down everybody. Zeke had 24 carries and got to 97 yards, but it took a lot of carries to get there. Dez Bryant only had three catches for 44 yards and was throwing tension tantrums on the sideline, said he wanted the ball, he wanted the ball. Well, they gave him the ball, and then he fumbled. He threw him the ball, it tipped off his hands for an interception, so Dez not really building the best case for yourself, while the Seahawks and Russell Wilson absolutely dominated this game. Russell Wilson literally only needed 93 passing yards, yes, and he still got two touchdowns connected with Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. He also was the leading rusher once again with 29 yards. It's truly ridiculous how much the Seattle Seahawks offense relies on Russell Wilson. 35 of their 36 offensive touchdowns this year have involved Russell Wilson. So I still got that man in the MVP conversation, especially if he can find a way to sneak his way back into the playoffs. The Seahawks will have the chance next week, but we will have to see what happens with the Falcons or the Seahawks to see who gets in. But let's go ahead and talk about our last game of the week. The Cardinals took care of the New York Giants 23-0 to win you some money right here on the Bays Golden Days. The Cardinals were favored by 4 points, and they shut out the Giants 23-0 for the first time since 1992 when they played against the Giants. I don't know how these things all come full circle, but they just do. Don't ask me any questions about them. The Cardinals got a huge win, and a win that might be the last for Bruce Arians. Kind of a weird time to come out with it, but there are rumors now that he could retire, could be fired, could just step down. Nobody knows. Bruce Arians came out and said it's fake news. I hope it's not. Hell, bring him over to Oakland. He could be an offense coordinator. That guy's got a great mind, because even with Drew Stanton, you're able to put up 23 points. Stanton had 209 yards, two touchdowns, two interceptions. A big part of that was OG Larry Fitzgerald. 9 catches, 119 yards, and a touchdown. He's now the oldest player ever with 1,000 yards and 100 catches in one season. And this is his 9th time going for over 1,000 yards. OG Larry Fitz. Man, I wish you would have had a quarterback your whole entire career. You're dealing with Kurt Warner coming out the supermarket, to Carson Palmer getting hurt, to Drew Stanton, to Blaine Gabbert. Larry Fitz, the OG, always got to show him some respect and always got to show him some love, because he was a big part of getting some points on the board and winning you some money right here on the Bay's Golden Days. But you know what it is. We're talking about money. We got to hop straight into week 17 now. Where my man Randy at?
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. It's time for week 17 of Straight Cash, homie, right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast, where we look at every single matchup from week 17 of the 2017 NFL season and give you our best picks and bets by the point spread. And you guys know the routine by now. We're getting to the last week of the season. We are going to start off with the Oakland Raiders traveling down to Los Angeles to have a home game versus the Chargers. Yes, you heard me correctly. I said that is a home game down in Los Angeles, because as all the Raider fans know, LA is a birthplace to the Oakland Raiders. The Raider Nation is worldwide, but LA is definitely one of the places where the LA Raiders had their heydays, won a Super Bowl down there. So I'm guaranteeing you there will be more Raider fans than Chargers fans at that little fucking soccer field. It will be the black hole of all soccer fields this weekend, as the Raiders are taking over in LA, and the Oakland Raiders have a chance to knock off the Chargers out of the playoffs. And oh man, how sweet it would be, because your boy has not forgot. 2008 it was, Tim Tebow getting into the playoffs because the Raiders lost to the Chargers in week 17 of that season. 8-8 were the Raiders, 8-8 were the Chargers, 8-8 were the Broncos, 8-8 were the Chiefs. I felt like it feels like everybody was 8-8 that year, and the Broncos lost in week 17, but because of tiebreakers, they got into the playoffs. So the Chargers beating the Raiders that year not only knocked out the Raiders out of playoffs, but it put Tim fucking Tebow in the playoffs. Not even the Chargers. They just had to spoil our season, and then had to spoil all of America's season, as Tim Tebow comes in and beats the Steelers somehow. and just goddamn, the Tebow mania did not stop. So I blame the Chargers for all that, and I am hoping for a fucking Christmas present and a happy new year that the Raiders upset the Chargers. The Chargers are favored by 7.5 points. Hell, even if I didn't want to go for the upset, I would still take the Raiders and the points, just like I did last week against the Eagles, because they would have covered if not for that last fucking fail of a last play, whatever the hell that was. But this Raiders-Chargers matchup is going to be a good one. The Chargers are playing great right now, and just a couple weeks ago, it seemed like everybody was picking the Chargers to win the division because the Chiefs were playing bad and they were the flavor of the week. But I told you I'm taking the Chiefs over the Chargers. I think they're better overall, and the Chargers are known for choking. They were the San Diego chokers. Now they're the LA super chokers. The choking does not just leave from one city over to the next. Hell, the Clippers thought they could run away from San Diego and go win in LA. They couldn't win there either. I don't think the Chargers are going to have any success, and I think the Raiders will win this weekend on the back of Marshawn Lynch. That's right, beast mode. I think he's going to come out and he's going to be running angry after losing his first fumble of the season week on Christmas. He's only 98 yards away from reaching 10,000 career yards, and I said we just feed beast mode, feed beast mode, feed beast mode, because honestly, I don't even want Derek throwing too much in his game with Donald Penn still out for the season, like I mentioned, and Marshall Newhouse looking like a barnyard door swinging open for defensive ends going up against Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. I do not want any part of that. We're going to have to get these quick passes off. Shit, Todd Downing, you love calling up screens. We're going to need a lot of them this weekend because the Chargers got a couple lockdown corners and Casey Hayward. But, hey, it will be interesting to see. Amari Cooper has torn him up before. Maybe Crabtree gets back in a game plan. Hopefully, I don't know. But I just really want to win on the back of Marshawn Lynch in L.A. in front of all the Raider fans. I think it's possible. Khalil Mack and his defense has been playing great. So if we can shut down Phillip Rivers, control the time of possession, don't turn the fucking ball over, I think the Raiders can not only cover this point spread, but can get the upset victory and knock the Chargers out of playoffs. And that will be good enough for me to end my season right there. So come on, Raiders. Give me something to celebrate at the end of the year, because this year has truly been an utter disappointment. But we are going to end the year on a high note, take out the Chargers, and get us some momentum going into the offseason. I want to see Derek Carr put up one great performance before the end of the year, dealing with all those injuries. It would be great just to see him get into the groove before the year is done. We'll see what happens, but I am taking the Raiders +7.5. Now let's get into the rest of the game Sunday morning. We got the Packers and the Lions, pretty much all division games this weekend, and you guys have known my rules for this whole entire year. Most division games, in my opinion, come down to a field goal, especially the second time the teams play each other, so you guys will catch a trend. If these teams are not playing for anything, I'm probably going to take the upset plus the points in this week, because there are some teams who aren't even playing for a win, aren't even playing for a loss, playing for a playoff spot, playing for a draft pick. I don't know. Week 17 is always a mess, and this is the exact reason why if you play in a fantasy football league where your championship is week 17, you are a pure idiot. But let's go ahead and get back to this game, the Packers and the Lions. The Lions are favored by 6.5. The Packers were just shut out last week. Stafford and the Lions got eliminated from the playoffs, so this game means nothing. So I might just take the Packers +6.5. The Texans and the Colts. The Colts are favored by 3.5. The Texans just got pretty much shut out by the Steelers. But like I said, it's a division game, so go ahead and give me the points. I think it's going to be decided by a field goal. I'll take the Texans +3.5. Moving on next, we got the Bears and the Vikings. The Vikings are still technically playing for that number one overall seed. They want home field advantage throughout the whole entire playoffs over the field off the Eagles somehow, some way. So I think the Vikings still come out and play hard. They probably will get another shutout against the Bears in all likelihood. They are favored by 11.5 points. That is a lot, but I could see them going up big early, maybe pulling the starters, maybe winning by a couple touchdowns. Yeah, I'll go ahead. The Vikings still got something to play for. Give me the Vikings -11.5. Next, we got the Jets and the Patriots. The Patriots are favored by 15.5. The Patriots have already locked up a first-round bye, but they still are playing for home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The Jets did play them tough last time, so for that reason, and it's a division game in Week 17, Tom Brady might get pulled out in the fourth quarter. So I think that the Jets might cover the spread. Go ahead and give me the Jets +15.5, but the Patriots definitely win this game. Moving on next, we got the Redskins and the Jets. Giants. The Redskins are favored by 3 points. Hell, that's only a field goal. If it was a 3.5, I'd maybe be tempted to go with the Giants, but it's not. So I'll go ahead and give me the Redskins. It'll probably end in a push because they'll probably win by a field goal. But Kirk Cousins tore up the Broncos defense last week. I think he can do the same thing to the Giants this week. So give me Kirk Cousins to end on a high note because he's looking to get paid. He's looking to not get franchise tagged. Hell, Kirk Cousins is trying to make a statement and get the Redskins back to 8-8. Give me the Washington Redskins minus 3 points. Next, we got the Cowboys and the Eagles. The Eagles have already clinched the first round bye, and the Dallas Cowboys are favored by 3 points. This is why Week 17 betting is stupid. Week 17 fantasy is stupid. Week 17 is just stupid because why the hell are the Cowboys favored by 3 points, sitting at 8-7 over the Eagles, who are 13-2? We saw the Eagles not play too hot this past weekend against the Raiders. I think they're going to have to try to figure some things out and get Nick Foles into more of a groove, into a flow, because you do not want to go into the playoffs throwing for 150 yards. You do not want to get outgained by the Raiders. You do not want to get outplayed by the Raiders in a game that you should have lost. So I think the Eagles will try to get their mojo back this weekend. So I will take the Eagles plus 3 against the Cowboys, the Browns, and the Steelers. Will the Browns have a chance to win the final game of the year? Hey, they could have a chance, as ridiculous as it sounds. The Steelers did bench their starters about halfway through the fourth quarter last week when they're blowing out the Texans. Hell, if they're blowing out the Browns, they could bench their starters also. But the Browns have kept some games close this year. They've only lost like once by more than 20 points. They haven't been blown out too many times. The Browns and the points might be the better pick just because I know the Pittsburgh Steelers haven't been covering spreads all year. I definitely think the Steelers will win, but the Browns and the points might be the better bet. Moving on to the Panthers and the Falcons in a fierce NFC South division face-off. This game's going to be interesting because the Panthers are already in the playoffs while the Falcons are win and get in. The Falcons are playing by 3.5. Overall, I do think the Panthers are a better team, but the Falcons got more to play for, so that makes it tricky. They're fair by 3.5. This game might come down to a field goal, so I'll go ahead and take the Panthers plus 3 just to try to game the system and try to win somehow, some way. Moving on next, we got the Bengals and the Ravens. The Ravens are winning, get in, so I think they're going to be coming out to play for force. I think they're going to shut down the Bengals offense with no Joe Mixon. They have truly been a disappointment, but hell, this could just be the Bengals coming out and playing their last game for Marvin Lewis and his swan song and could pull some hell of an upset. Hell, it could happen, but I don't think so. I'll stick with John Harbaugh and the Ravens. Give me the Ravens to win, minus 9.5 points. Next, we got the Bills and the Dolphins. The Bills are favored by 2.5 points over the Dolphins. I can't bet on Jay Cutler. I've talked about taking a plus points, but hey, the Bills being favored by only 2.5, that means if they win by a field goal, they win you some money. Go ahead and give me the Bills, LeSean McCoy, and Tyrod Taylor to win, minus 2.5 points over the Dolphins. Next, we got the Saints and the Buccaneers. The Saints have already locked up a playoff spot, sitting at 11-4, and they are a 7-point favorite over the Buccaneers, which means the Saints could bench some people. We just don't know. Jameis Winston kept the game close last week against the Panthers, but obviously, as we've seen, the Saints are pretty much the best team in the NFC South this year, so I'll go ahead and take the Saints to win by more than a touchdown. Hopefully, them benching the players late doesn't come back to bite us in the ass. Next, we got the Jaguars and the Titans, and man, oh man, is this an interesting one because the Titans are winning, get in, while the Jaguars have already clinched the AFC South. But no one wants to end the year on back-to-back losses, especially when you were supposed to be the number one defense and the 49ers just put up 44 points. Yes, I know a couple pick sixes. It wasn't all the offense, but still, you want to get back on track. I think the Jaguars come out and try to prove a point. If they beat the Titans might get knocked out of the playoffs. The Bills or the Chargers might hop in there. Oh, man, that's tricky. I might have to stick with the Jaguars, though, to get back on track. Plus 3 points. The Titans are a favorite at home. They'll have more to play for, but I think these Jacksonville Jaguars want to get back on track before the playoffs, so go ahead and give me the Jaguars plus 3 points. Next up, we got a couple AFC West division matchups. I already talked about the Raiders and the Chargers, so we got the Chiefs and the Broncos facing off in Denver, and the Broncos are favored by 3.5 points. Who the fuck is making these lines? Vegas? Do you already know what quarterbacks are sitting out in the second half? Do they know who's on the bench or not? Because in no way, in no world, in any case, should the Broncos be favored by 3.5 points over the Chiefs. It just doesn't make sense. But like I said, that's probably good for us because these division games are decided by 3 points. If the Broncos somehow pull off an upset, they're only going to win by a field goal. So go ahead and give me the Chiefs plus 3.5 points. That might be my lock of the week because I know the Chiefs want to get some momentum going and keep this winning streak going into the playoffs. Then we got the 49ers and the Rams. As we move into the NFC West, the 49ers are favored by 3 points. God damn it. I hate week 17. Should I just egg the segment here and not even pick teams anymore? Because the 49ers sitting at 5-10 should not be favored over the Rams. I know they're on a 5-game winning streak. They're one of the hottest teams in the NFL. Well, guess what? So are the Rams. Everybody's talking about, oh, 49ers are going to be back in the playoffs, back in the Super Bowl. Hell, you got to get by the Rams and the Seahawks first to do it. Hell, the Cardinals still haven't got a good defense. Jimmy Garoppolo has not played anybody in his division yet. We'll see what he can do against the Rams. Hey, the past couple years, the only team the 49ers were able to beat are the Rams, but this is a different Rams defense. This is one of those tricky ones where, hey, Todd Gurley, does he get benched in the second half? If Todd Gurley plays his whole game and the Rams play all their starters all the way through because they are still trying to get that first round bye, maybe a home field advantage, I think that the Rams come out and get the win at home. So give me the Rams +3 over the Niners. Damn, none of these point spreads make a damn lick of sense this week. And then we get to our final game of the week, and that is the Cardinals and the Seahawks. The Seahawks are winning, get in, so they are favored by 9.5 points. It comes down to this. The Seahawks got to win, and they got to be hoping for a Falcons loss, actually, so it is not winning get in for the Seahawks. They need a little bit of help because they lost to the Falcons earlier in the season, but I think they beat the Cardinals. If the Panthers beat the Falcons, they're in. I like the Seahawks -9.5 to win this game by double digits, and that is every single game, every single point spread, every single pick right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. Let me get a quick recap for you before we go off. Packers, Lions on Sunday morning. I like the Packers +6.5. Texans, Colts. I like the Texans +3.5. Bears, Vikings. I like the Vikings -11.5. Jets, Patriots. I like the Patriots to win, but the Jets +15.5. The Redskins and the Giants. I like the Redskins -3. The Cowboys and the Eagles. I like the Eagles +3. The Browns and the Steelers. I like the Steelers to win, but the Browns might keep it close, so take the Browns +11. The Panthers and the Falcons. I think the Falcons got more to play for, but the Panthers could keep it close and lose by a field goal, so I'll take the Panthers +3.5. The Bengals and the Ravens. The Ravens are playing for the playoff lives. Take the Ravens -9.5. The Bills and the Dolphins. I'll take the Bills -2.5. The Saints and the Buccaneers. I'll take the Saints -7. The Jaguars and the Titans. I'll take the Jaguars +3. The Chiefs and the Broncos. I'll take the Chiefs +3.5. The 49ers and the Rams. I'll take the Rams +3. The Cardinals and the Seahawks. I'm taking the Seahawks -9.5. And for the upset of the week, I'm taking the Raiders to knock the Chargers out of playoff contention +7.5 points. And that is every single bet, everything you need to know, and every single game for the 2017 season has now been previewed right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. We'll get our last review in last week, and then we'll get into the playoffs. We'll get it all, and like I've been saying all year, even this week was probably our worst week of betting. We still had 8 games. We have never been below the 500 mark, and we're just going to keep on moving and moving, moving forward, and then we're going to get into playoffs, and we're going to keep on winning you some more money. And you know what I said, 2018 is going to be a big year. We're going to get some MMA podcasts, get back into the MLB. We got the NBA season going on right now. We're going to talk about it all right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing on iTunes and Google Play. You can check out our website at bgdsports.com for all the newest and latest updates. That is the first place we post the podcast. So go ahead and save that website to your homepage so you can be the first person to listen to every new podcast, because if you're not first, you're last. Just like this playoff season, if you're not in, you're out. Win or go home. If you're not first, you're last. And to everybody who played fantasy football, I'm first place. If you won first place too, congratulations. That's how we'll wrap up this podcast. To all the fantasy champions, fuck your league. Congratulations to you. Collect your money. I'm Marcus Boucher. Thanks for listening. I'm out. Sold it.
Steady gold. Pony boy.